Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, co-host of Vermont Edition. I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Early voting is underway for Vermont's August 9th primaries. Today, Secretary of State Jim Condos joins us to tell us about the early voting process. Later in the hour, we'll take a look at the Stopping Stones Project, which honors enslaved people who lived in Vermont. The latest commemorative stopping stone was placed in Bennington over the weekend. But first, Secretary of State Jim Condos manages an 80-person office that handles elections, campaign finance reporting, the state archives, consumer protections, and more. Condos is preparing to retire after 12 years in the position and many more years of public service. But first, he's got primary and general elections to get through. Secretary Condos, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michaela. It's great to be here.
What are your questions for Secretary of State Jim Condos? Give us a call, 800-639-2211. You can also tweet us at Vermont Edition or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Oh, Secretary Condos, lots of questions for you, but let's start with early voting since it just kicked off a couple days ago. Can you tell us what is different about early voting this year compared to, say, you know, during the height of the pandemic? For the past 2 years?
Actually, for the primary, nothing is really different. There's been a misconception out there that we've changed the process, and we haven't. Prior to the pandemic, people would request their ballot from their town clerk, and the town clerk would mail them the appropriate ballots. Today, or last year, or last election, I should say, we tried to make it easier because of the pandemic, and we had a postage paid return postcard where they could send it directly to their, they would receive a postcard and get, and then fill it out and send it back to their town clerk. This year, we just did a one-way postcard and basically explained the process and tell them how to request a ballot. And a lot of that has to do with cost. 2 years ago, we had COVID relief money that we were able to use, and that helped to pay the cost. Just the fact that we're mailing out a postcard to all active registered voters cost us about $200,000 just for that alone, and it would have doubled, at least doubled, if we were having to have them return it. So in any case, what has to happen? So the people can go, they didn't need to receive a postcard. They can actually just go to our elections webpage, click on voters, click on my voter page, that is mvp.vermontspelledout.gov. And they can, that'll take them to their unique voter page, which every registered voter has a unique page with their information, with their town clerk, all the different components of that information. And they also have a place where they can actually request a ballot to be mailed to them. The other way is to do it by paper and just mail it in. The other way would be in person by email or by phone to your town clerk. In any case, it's really the town clerk who has to process and mail the appropriate ballots out to voters. And again, that's for the August 9th primary. We always remind people that if they're going to mail it back to their town clerk, they should put it in the mail no later than 7 days before the election to ensure that it gets back. If it's after 7 days, they should either bring it into their town clerk's office, drop it off at a drop box, or bring it to the polls on election day.
Let's add a couple of days. We'll say the end of July. Get your mail-in ballots in so they make it for the August 9th primary. Secretary Condos, what about somebody who isn't registered to vote yet? What should they do?
They can register online. They can go to their town clerk. Either way, you can actually register to vote right up until 7 p.m. on election day. So we have same day voter registration here in Vermont, which makes it very simple for people to do. There's about, I forget how many states, there's more than 20 states that actually have it now. But I do want to go back, Michaela, to the primary itself, the Please. Ballots, because when people will, what they will receive are three primary ballots, one for each party, major party, Republican, Democrat, and Progressive. They'll also receive three envelopes inside of the main envelope. One is the return envelope to their town clerk. The second is for unvoted ballots, and the third is for the voted ballot. People are, even though they're sent three primary ballots, they're only allowed to vote one ballot, but they have to return all three ballots back to their town clerk.
Now, Secretary Condos, I did my journalistic research and I requested my my ballot. And last night I sat at my kitchen table and I opened it. I looked at all three ballots. So talk me through this in a bit more detail. I have, you know, the one in front of me for the Republican candidates, the Democrats and the Progressives. If I want to vote for a couple Democrats and a Republican, can I do that?
No, you cannot. You can only vote one ballot. And it's just essentially what we're doing here, Michaela. The primary is really three elections in one day. It's a Republican nomination election, it's a Democratic nomination, and a Progressive nomination. And you can't cross from one party to another.
All right. And just to be clear, that was very much a hypothetical. my votes are my own private matter. You don't get to know them, Secretary
yes.
Condos.
And to be clear too, Michaela, that it's the laws are this is by state law, and this dates back to around 1980 when there was an agreement between the major parties and the state legislature as to how the primary election would run.
Now, can we go back a bit to 2020? Because that was a big election. A lot of voting logistics changed, not just in Vermont, but around the country as election officials, secretaries of state tried to figure out how to make sure people voted while staying safe and at home and socially distanced. And you said that, you know, it cost a lot of money to make sure that happened. It was a big logistical lift. What can you talk us through what kind of lift that took? Because it's going to be a big part of your legacy.
Well, it really was a huge effort by my elections team. And I have to give them kudos because the elections team with Will Senning as the director was responsible for making sure this went through. And myself and my deputy, Chris Winters, we were just there to add support and resources when needed. But it in essence, what happened was as the pandemic started to rear its head in late January, early February, we went to the legislature and asked them to think about what would happen if they get out of session and we're still in a lockdown mode with an election later that year, because they would not, once they adjourned in 2020, they would not be back until 21. So we asked them, we talked it out with leadership and we all decided, and this included the Republicans, the Democrats, the Progressives, it included the governor's office. We all decided that there would be emergency temporary powers that the Secretary of State would have to change some of our laws to make sure that people were able to cast a ballot, their constitutional right to cast a ballot, while still protecting their health and safety. And it was a huge effort. The legislature passed it relatively quickly. And as we know, I think it was March 20th of 2020 was when the governor shut down the state. We started to work towards deciding what we were going to do. And it became very quickly apparent to us that this was not going away quickly and we were going to need to do something different. And based on we knew that we weren't going to be able to do anything for the primary. The primary, we just had to make it easy for folks to be able to request a ballot because of the pandemic. The general election offered us a little more time, not a whole lot, but a little bit more time.
Now, can I jump in here, Secretary Condos? I'm curious with the general election, if you saw or noticed a change in turnout or found that any demographic used vote by mail more than other ones?
Well, in the primary, primary and the general election, Michaela, both had record-shattering turnout. We had, I think, roughly 25, I forget the exact numbers, but I think it was 25 to 50,000 in the primary. We set a new record there, and we also had at least 50,000 new voters turn out for the general election. Now, in the general election, we did mail a ballot to every active registered voter. That was easier than the primary. The primary would have cost an awful lot more money because you had three envelopes inside the main envelope. You had three ballots. You had an explanation sheet. So there was a lot that has to be in that first envelope. But for the primary, for the general election, it was a simple one ballot, one envelope coming back. And it was much easier to do.
It reminds me of mailing wedding invitations with all those little different pieces in them. It gets heavy. That postage costs a lot, right?
Yes, it does.
We're on the line with Secretary of State Jim Condos. Right now we're talking about early voting. If you have questions about the early voting process, the August 9th primary, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Again, that's 800-639-2211. Now, Secretary Condos, we got into this a little bit, but did you notice that any particular political party relied on vote by mail more than another one? Did you notice any differences along party lines?
It's interesting that you asked that because there was a lot of during the debate in the legislature, there were a lot of folks who were saying it was going to reflect better on one party than the other. But within a couple of days after the election, I had a couple of different Republican legislators, veteran legislators, who called me and said they were wrong, that I was right, that this benefited everybody. I can't tell you for sure, you know, what was going to happen as far as turnout. We're in this business, we're pretty reluctant to say we're going to have a good turnout or not. There's so many factors that are involved, including weather, including the pandemic, including the competitiveness of key races, including competitiveness of lower races, and it might be by county or town. So there's a lot of different pieces of that discussion to try to predict anything. But I will say that it was clear to us, it was clear to the legislature, that voting by mail, which was at the time, there were five states that are already doing it on a regular basis. Oregon's been doing it for, I think, more than 20 years. Utah, which by any mention of the words, is a strongly Republican state, and they embraced it. So this is not something that really is a partisan issue. This is really about ballot access and making sure that people are able to cast a ballot. People lead busy lives these days, and they can't always show up on election day.
Secretary Condos, one of the topics that's been really interesting for me to follow over the past year or so is the issue of non-citizen voting. Now, in recent years, some communities in Vermont, including Montpelier, have passed laws letting people who are not American citizens vote. And the Republican Party is suing over this. Do you have an opinion on whether voting should be limited to U.S. citizens?
Federal and state elections, absolutely, because both constitutions.
I'm sorry, Secretary Condos, you cut out right at the beginning. Do you mind restarting your answer?
If you are talking about federal and state races, absolutely, it's prohibited. It's really mentioned in both the U.S. and the Vermont Constitution that you must be citizens. So that's one point. As far as the local, I don't have the exact information in front of me, but I do know that up until I think the early 1920s, non-citizens were allowed to vote in local elections. So, you know, I think in this particular instance, it really became a case of it's up to the locals to decide. And I think there is a concern or a question as to whether they should be voting on school budgets, because the school budgets actually impact every other school budget in the state. But there is, I don't think there's any real opposition other than what you had mentioned in the lawsuits to non-citizens voting on municipal issues. And you know, think about it, Michaela, they live in those communities, they pay taxes, they're members of neighborhoods and whatever, and many of them, and our immigration system is so broken that many of them, it takes decades to get approved for citizenship, and yet we have this very strict plan or policy in place because but it's up to the town. I believe it is up to the town for municipal elections, and they will have to deal with the process there. I do think that overall, you know, we will see great strides made as technology improves the processes that we have in order to keep track of all these.
Well, speaking of technology, a lot of people in Vermont support this idea of ranked choice voting. And I'm curious about the technical challenges that ranked choice voting could pose to town clerks and election officials that they would have to overcome to make it part of more elections in the state.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I support the idea of ranked choice voting. It used to be called IRV or instant runoff voting, and I had supported and actually introduced legislation when I was in the state Senate. And we know that what happened. We know what happened in Burlington. There were two mayoral elections run by instant runoff voting, and actually people say it failed. Well, it didn't fail. What failed was the fact that the candidate that they had was the one that caused the problem, and it was really not the process. The process worked. The process did exactly what it's supposed to do, and that's get to a majority vote. You know, this year there was some late discussion in the legislature. We were asked to come testify. There was like we were given 1 hour on the last day of crossover. It was in the last hours, and we were told that there was a bill that had been introduced that they wanted to review, and the bill was not the bill that we had discussed with some of the advocates, so we had no choice but to pull our support. Plus, we had some other issues that had popped up. For instance, our election management system contract runs out just prior to the 24 presidential election, our presidential primary, and we didn't want to compound the technology aspects of it. Secondly, not every town in Vermont has a tabulator, and to do this by hand is very cumbersome and difficult, and easily mistakes can easily be made.
What's a tabulator?
A tabulator is the scanner that scans the ballot that you put your ballot into in a what we call a tabulator town. So we have 246 towns in Vermont, and we have about 145 towns that have tabulators. They're not the issue. Those tabulators can be programmed to deal with ranked choice voting as needed. It's the hand count towns, of which there are about 100, that would be more problematic. Every town in the state of Vermont that has 1,000 voters or more is required to have a tabulator. That was something the legislature did a few years ago, as we became clearly aware that the scanning equipment was far superior than the human eye. And the problem is that as the night goes on, human eye sees things. And I can tell you when I'm editing an op-ed before it goes out, I often have to lay it down for a while and come back to it later, because you start reading words in there that aren't even there anymore, but you still read them. And so the human eye can play a role here, and you want to make sure that any count that you have is accurate. And that's obviously from our elections team, everybody, and in our town clerks, who are some of the hardest working municipal officials in the state, we all want safe, secure, and accurate elections.
We're on the line with Secretary of State Jim Condos. If you have questions about early voting or voter security, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Let's go to John in Ferrisburg. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. I think you've done a wonderful job, Secretary Condos. But I do have some questions about my constitutional rights, the privacy when I'm voting, when I have to declare affiliation with one party or the other. And secondly, as you just mentioned earlier today, when you cast a ballot for primaries, you are only allowed to vote for one party's candidates. That seems to limit my selection, and I don't think that is very constitutionally correct. So I think you've done a wonderful job, and I agree. I've counted votes many nights, and your eyes do get tired counting those votes. I have to agree with your last comment there. I'll turn it over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that call, John. Secretary Condos, could you address some of his concerns?
Yeah, I will certainly do that. And John, thanks for the question. One of the things I think we lose sight of is, first of all, we've been doing the primary voting for this way since like 1980. And this is legislative change. This is not something that we're actually looking at how if the governor has been outspoken about he wants vote by mail to extend to the primary, and I don't disagree with them, but it's a matter of the process and how we get there. And it's this whole idea that we have the three ballots. Currently, it's just three ballots. It used to be four, because we had a fourth major party in the Liberty Union Party. So now it's just three, and it's a Republican, Democratic, and progressive. And again, I said it before, and I'll say it again, we're actually running three different primaries, three different elections. These elections, each one of those elections is designed to capture the nomination of that party to the general election ballot. This is not, the state manages the primary, but it's really a party nomination process.
No, Secretary Condos, you've been in this position for 12 years. I'm curious if you can reflect on some of the major changes over the past 12 years, particularly with Vermonters' attitudes towards voter security and the importance of safe and secure elections and their trust in state officials and town clerks to manage those. Have you seen a shift over the last 12 years?
I would say it's really more than 12 years, but you don't forget I was in the state Senate for 8 years prior, and I dealt with a lot of the issues. I worked with Secretary Markowitz before me to make some changes. For instance, the very first thing, which is what we call the gold standard for voting security, is we require a paper ballot for every vote that's cast. That's the first item, and that was done back in 2002. In 2005, Secretary Markowitz came to the committee and said she wanted to implement enact post-election audits for the general election. So we did that in 2005. It began in 2006. Then in 2009, we had extended early voting was moved from 30 days to 45. And that 45-day period was because overseas and military voters are given 45 days. And the legislature felt that if it was good enough for overseas and military, it was good enough for all Vermonters. You know, in 2010, we had the Vermont Constitutional Amendment allowing 17-year-olds to vote in presidential or general election primaries if they turned 18 by general election day. And the concept again there is that this is not a state, it's not a state election, the primaries, they're really nominating processes. In 2012, we enacted election night reporting. These are unofficial results. Before that, you had to just go from station to station to try to get the reporting on what was happening. We added online campaign finance and lobbyist disclosure in 2015. Election day registration in 2015 was passed. Automatic voter registration was passed in 2016. One of the things that we're most proud of at the office is when I first took office in 2012, the first election that I ran, that I oversaw, we were ranked 38th in the nation in a state ranking of the called the EPI, the Election Performance Index. It's currently run by MIT, and it's a data-driven system. It's the same data across the country. Today, we're number one. The last two presidential elections, we've been number one in the nation, and we're really proud of that fact. So there's a lot of different factors. You know, we added, like I said, same day automatic voter. We have a fully ADA compatible accessible voting system. We worked with the accessible voting community to help design that. We were one of the first in the nation. You know, we've added now universal vote by mail starting, this is permanent starting this year. We've added ballot curing, which we never had before. We've added ballot drop boxes, which we started during the pandemic and has been a huge success. And this year we're adding new vote tabulators. So those are the things that we've been working on. And those are the things that have helped make us one of the bright spots in the country for election security and performance.
Well, still a lot to accomplish in the future, especially as you know, disinformation around elections, accusations of election fraud really are flourishing on social media and across the country, not necessarily particularly here in Vermont, but you know, your successor in this role will have a lot to do. What do you think are some of the major challenges for the future Secretary of State?
So it certainly is going to be constant. You have to stay focused on what we're doing. And, you know, when I went to a national conference in 2013, and when I came back, I asked my IT manager if how we were positioned from a cybersecurity standpoint. And he said he thought we were pretty good shape, but that it wouldn't be bad to have an outside vendor come in with expertise. We did. We got a plan put in front of us with high, low, and medium priority status, and we've enacted that. In 2016, as you remember, in that presidential election year, There were wild accusations flying around about Russia trying to get in, about Iraq, Iran, North Korea, whatever, China. And so we talked with our federal partners. Now, up to 2016, we never talked with our federal partners. We just didn't have that conversation. Following 2016, the cybersecurity unit of DHS was set up, and I played an important role with that as the president of NAS in 2018, it's become, as I say, cybersecurity is a race without a finish line. It's now our everyday focus. We are constantly monitoring our systems. We have two different vendors that monitor for intrusion attempts. In 2018, August of 2018, my IT manager came to me and said, he showed me the log from the night before, and there were several attempts by country of origin, Russia. We informed, I called up Homeland Security, and within 36 hours, they had sent a nationwide alert out to all 50 states to be on the lookout for certain IP addresses.
Hmm. Well, Secretary Kondos, I'd like to switch tacks here for just a moment. Now, obviously, we're in the midst of election season. And at the end of March, you wrote legislators this long email about the importance of filing their campaign finance reforms. A number of folks were late on those. They're mandated by Vermont law to be filed at regular intervals. Now, you've advocated for tighter enforcement of this law in the past. I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit more about what you would like to see in the future. Like, do you believe there should be more penalties for legislators who file late?
I do, and not just legislators. It goes sure. for the statewides as well.
Obviously, yes, any candidates.
Any candidates except for the federal. We don't have any control on the federal races. What occurred was about 2 weeks after the March deadline, I had gotten a call from a reporter who asked me, "I don't see so and so's." Campaign finance report. And I said, well, let me get on. And I looked, and then I started to look around, and I noticed that between the House and the Senate, there were like probably only 50% had actually submitted a campaign finance report on the deadline. So I wrote an email that was not intended. The email was not intended to go public. It was meant to stay to all the legislators. I sent it to every legislator and just basically said, hey, you guys, here's the law. You're supposed to be filing. If you need some help, give us a call. I mean, that was the gist of it. Someone from the House or the Senate leaked it to the press, and all hell broke loose. Sorry about that. But it became a real problem. And there are still people who have not filed. Some people have not filed from their from the end of the 2020 election and their final reports. But there's no consequence. There's no bad boy list or bad girl list. It's just someone has to actually look to see who's there, who's filed. I've long asked, when we first went online, I said, this is a good time to also enact some kind of a penalty. I was thinking, enact a penalty of like $50 or something if you're late more than 30 days getting your report in. Let's keep in mind, what is the campaign finance system about? It's so that the voters know what their candidates, where they're getting their money from, and how they're spending it. It's about transparency. And
is there a way that a voter could find out whether or not their elected official has filed these reports on time?
Yeah, we have an online system. We have a public online system where people can go and look to see who's filed.
Secretary Condos, we have just a couple minutes left with you. I got two last questions for you. The first one, we here at Vermont Edition are going to be hosting a debate in the next couple of weeks for Secretary of State, for the person to fill your shoes. Leading candidates right now are Representative Sarah Copeland-Hansis, Deputy Secretary of State Chris Winters, and Montpelier's City Clerk John Odom. Who do you endorse to fill your seat?
You are asking a question that I've always struggled with. They all have their strengths and their weaknesses. But in my view, Chris Winters has been with me at my side for 7 years now. He's been in the office for 25. And if he is lucky to be elected by the people, he'll make a great Secretary of State. I just think that he's been indispensable in carrying out the vision of our office. And it would be really important for him to be able to continue that practice.
And finally, Secretary Condos, what are your plans for retirement?
To be determined. I guess, you know, I don't retire until the first week of January, and my plan is to take a few weeks and make some decisions as to what I want to do. I may do some volunteering. I've got a couple of grandkids. My significant other has a couple of grandkids, and we'll probably spend some more time visiting them. I'll be around, and I'll be watching what's going on, and probably will testify in the legislature on many a topic.
Are we going to see you volunteering to count ballots in your town?
Potentially.
You need a break.
I need a break for right now. You know, it's funny you ask that, because a lot of my legislative colleagues, when I was in the legislature, would take off, during town meeting week, and a lot just go on vacation for that week. And I've not taken a vacation during town meeting week since prior to 2020. So I think I'm entitled to do that at some point, and next year sounds awfully good.
All right. Jim Condos is Vermont's Secretary of State. Thank you so much for joining the program today.
You're welcome, Michaela.